Hi, everyone. I'm Catelyn Rideau, and I'm with the NYU Center for the Study of Asian American Health. And I'm going to be talking today about a community health needs assessment that we did in diverse Asian American communities in New York City. I have no relationships to disclose. So I wanted to start with this quote that was recently in the New York Times in an article called The Asian Advantage. It's no secret that Asian Americans are disproportionately stars in American schools and even in American societies as a whole. So the problem with this quote is that it perpetuates the model minority myth and the idea that Asian Americans are without problems or unmet needs and are healthier than any other racial ethnic minority group. It also perpetuates the inaccurate defining of Asian Americans as a monolithic group. So I wanted to show here a quick, snapshot of some of the findings from our needs assessment, which shows the percentage of Asian Americans who we surveyed who have less than a high school education. So as you can see, the percentage varies greatly by different Asian subgroup, and it's also very high in some Asian subgroups, such as the Vietnamese, the Himalayan, the Cambodian, and the Chinese. And the last column there shows the 2010 census for Asian Americans overall in New York City. So as you can see, contrary to what Nicholas Kristof says, many Asian Americans do have low educational attainment. Similarly, a 2013 report by the National Coalition for Asian Pacific American Community Development found that 1 out of 4 Asian Americans in New York City live in poverty, and 30% of Asian American seniors in New York City are living in poverty. So I want to share just a little more background on Asian Americans to help set the stage for the work that we carried out. In the U.S., Asian Americans are the fastest growing racial ethnic group, and they represent a diverse community of over 30 countries of origin, various cultures, religions, migration history, acculturation, and socioeconomic status. And in New York City, Asian Americans make up 14% of the population and growing. And again, they represent more than 20 diverse countries and 45 languages and dialects. Many of New York City's Asian American populations experience high rates of limited English language proficiency and other language barriers. And there's also significant and wide variation of health disparities. So given this diversity and the significant health disparities that exist, as well as the misconception of Asian Americans as a monolithic group and a model minority, there's a need for more disaggregated data on New York City's diverse and emerging Asian American subgroups, in particular New York City's immigrant and hard-to-reach Asian American communities. So the purpose of my talk today is to share the process and preliminary findings of our community-based health needs assessment, and to demonstrate that community-engaged strategies are critical to reaching hard-to-reach communities. Here's the outline for today. So I wanted to take a quick minute to tell you a little bit more about CESA, the NYU Center for the Study of Asian American Health, the development of our needs assessment, implementation and dissemination of our needs assessment, and then I'll end with a few take-home messages. So CESA has 5 guiding principles, including working with diverse stakeholders, using a QBPR and an action-oriented research approach, strengthening community capacity, and conducting multicultural evaluations. CESA's mission is to reduce health disparities in the Asian American community through research, training, and partnership development. And we use a QBPR approach. So we conduct research to understand, address, and eliminate health disparities. We do education and training for health professionals on community-based approaches. And we build and strengthen existing partnerships. So to help meet CESA's mission and to help us to understand the health needs of diverse Asian Americans in New York City, we completed a first round of health assessments back in 2004 and 2006. The goals of the assessment were to determine existing health issues, the resources available to Asian Americans, and the best approaches to meet the needs of these communities. And the findings are important to guiding CESA's research direction. So in the first round, we collected over 1,000 surveys, including in communities, the Cambodian community, Chinese, Japanese, Korean, Asian Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi, Thai, and Vietnamese. So then we started our second round in 2013, and it's continuing today. And the second round in particular will allow us to address the increasing diversity of the Asian American community in New York City, including new emerging subgroups, as well as allow us to look at changes in health priorities in the last decade. So examples of some of the new emerging communities in New York City include the Nepalese and the Burmese communities. So they were considered insignificant numbers in the 2010 census, but then on the 2000 census, but then on the 2010 census, they represented about 6,000 and 4,000 respectively. Although the community partners that we work with in New York City tell us that those numbers are significantly higher and that the census undercounts these communities. And so our goal is to collect about 100 surveys in each community. So in terms of developing the surveys, we met with several of CISA's main community partners to discuss health priorities and important topic areas or questions to be included. Then the survey tool itself was developed through the adaptation of existing surveys, validated surveys such as the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. We created a master survey with 14 modules such as demographics, healthcare access, nutrition, physical activity. Then we included or excluded those modules based on relevancy for each community. So for example, we have a smokeless tobacco module that we have for our South Asian communities that asks about things like pan or gutkha. And then we outreached to and worked with community partners to refine and tailor the survey, including translation, implement the survey, and so identifying venues and events to administer the survey, and then finally working with our community partners to disseminate the survey. Currently we have outreach to and have surveyed or are in the process of surveying these 15 Asian American subgroups: Arab, Bangladeshi, Burmese, Cambodian, Chinese, Filipino, Himalayan, Indo-Caribbean, Indian, Indonesian, Korean, Pakistani, Sri Lankan, Thai, and Vietnamese. And we're still hoping to survey the Bhutanese and Malaysian community in New York City. So here's that slide again. So our needs assessment used a community-engaged approach. There were very differing levels of involvement from community groups on the project. So for example, some community groups, as I mentioned before, were involved with us right from the beginning and helped to develop the survey tool and helped to inform the process. Other community groups maybe just helped to translate the survey and invited us to community events. Our main partner in the Vietnamese and Cambodian community, an organization called Mekong, New York City, they really just took over the project and they did all the surveying themselves, and they're currently using the findings to help in their advocacy work. Other community groups really just simply invited us to attend events and table at their events or come and survey their staff. So in terms of reaching out to community groups who are working in the 15 communities that we surveyed, the most success that we had, of course, was just building on existing relationships. So luckily, CISA has been around for over 12 years, so we have a lot of existing partnerships that we could tap into. But also, our staff had a lot of different partnerships that we were able to tap into, and many of the students who came to work with us had existing relationships in the communities that they're from and they work in that we could leverage. Going down from there, the next level down was being introduced to other community groups or businesses through those existing partnerships. And then sort of, going down the list in terms of the success that we had in building a partnership, goes from visits. So sometimes we would just show up to a faith-based organization or a community group and ask if they had time to meet with us to learn about the project and see if they wanted to get involved. To really just doing cold calls and emails, which definitely took a lot more time and was more difficult and required a lot of follow-up. Additional key components to building successful partnerships and reaching immigrant and hard-to-reach communities definitely just showing up. So we spent a lot of evening and weekends attending community events and fairs and galas, whether or not they were opportunities to do the survey, just as a way to show our commitment to working in the communities. Reciprocity in terms of having a mutual beneficial partnership. So we did that through a couple different ways in terms of giving back through participating in events, buying tickets to galas and fundraisers, providing financial contributions for their partnership in the project, providing data or other information from our center to help in their advocacy and service mission-driven work. And then finally, the power of students. So we had over 50 students help us beginning in 2013. They represent over 15 Asian American communities. They represent over 20 different languages. Our students were really critical to getting this work carried out in terms of they had the language skills, but also we just really needed the manpower and the woman power that they brought. It's a giant project with very little funding in so many different diverse communities. So there's our group just this past summer. To help in conducting outreach, we would always bring along with us community monographs, we call them, which you see on the far left side. And so those are from the first round of surveying that we did back in 2004 and 2006. And they're really nice sort of community booklets with the findings from that first round of surveys. So it's a way for us to show the community, this is the results we found the first time. We want to show this is something similar that we're going to do this time. And then on the far right is an example of some one-pagers that we put together for each community, translated in each community. And these one-pagers contain information about the importance of collecting health information and how the findings would be used. In terms of implementation, we used a venue-based sampling approach, and we collected most of our surveys at community events. We went to food fairs, we went to health fairs, street fairs, other community events. We did a lot of surveying at faith-based organizations. We also tried to reach community members at their businesses, so we went to nail salons and restaurants and other types of businesses. The surveys were administered in language by our volunteers and interns and also staff of the community partners that we were working with. The surveys were anonymous and confidential, which helped, again, also to reach hard-to-reach communities. And participants received a small gift for participating in the survey. And so we had water bottles and umbrellas with our CISA logo on it that we would give as a small gift. So I'm really only showing very brief findings from our survey because mostly today I want to talk about the process that we used, the community engaged process that we used. But to date, we've collected 1,695 surveys, and our results do support the literature in showing that there are high levels of low English language proficiency among the majority of Asian American subgroups that we surveyed, as well as low socioeconomic status, and distinct health priorities per subgroup that were associated with things like migration histories, culture, religion, English language proficiency, and socioeconomic status. So just as some examples, we saw very low cancer screening rates in Bangladeshi and Pakistani women. We saw very high diabetes diagnosis in Bangladeshi, Indian, and Pakistani subgroups. And then we saw oral health concerns in many of the subgroups that we surveyed. In terms of dissemination, we created these four-page community briefs using infographics to present the results of our findings. And our community partners are working with us right now to review the reports and to help us translate them. And then we're working with our community partners as well to find opportunities to disseminate the reports back to the community. So again, we'll probably take advantage of community events like street fairs and health fairs to present the reports back to the community. So in conclusion, using a community-partnered approach allowed us to collect data on this hard-to-reach and understudied population. And then just a few take-home messages. So trusted community partners can help you to reach hard-to-reach communities, but that doesn't mean that community partners are still going to trust you, so we definitely did still have people who we approached who refuse to participate in the survey, especially I think when you're working with immigrant communities, there can be a lot of distrust of people who are asking questions and collecting information. Building partnerships and gaining access to communities takes time. I think anybody who does CBPR knows this, or community engaged work knows this. So we started in 2013 and we're still going. And then finally, diverse communities require diverse approaches. So just because one approach was successful in one community didn't necessarily mean it was successful in another community, especially because we were working with such diverse communities. So just to give you one example, in the Himalayan community, we really had a very smooth process. We had great partnerships with a lot of community groups that work in that community. You know, for various reasons, people wanted to participate in the survey. They were excited to participate in the survey. So we actually rolled that survey out pretty quickly. And then to contrast that with the Thai community, it's a growing and emerging population in New York, but there hasn't been the same sort of growing of community organizations to meet that need. So there's just not as many community groups to tap into. So we are just sort of struggling a little bit more to reach that community. And I think that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Do I have a question?
So for the pieces that we developed, I think we own the copyright for that. For the reports and stuff, truth be told, I hadn't even thought about that issue until you brought it up. The things that we have in there are all publicly available, like reports and materials. And so for us, I think our thinking was not saying that we made these, of course, but just being like to try to reduce barriers. Oh, here's the website. You know, sometimes those links aren't always maintained. But yeah, that's a really good point. It's something we'll have to think about some more. Thanks.
While you're up here, I was going to just have a quick question for you. You mentioned you had partners in different places. For group consensus, did you use webinars, or how did you get everyone together to make these decisions?
Sure. So to get everyone together, during those bi-monthly calls, there were call-ins. So folks were either physically in the space or called in, and then we would sit on the phone.
How did that go for people participating?
I mean, I think our partnership is pretty close, and folks are pretty vocal when they agree or disagree,
they were able to
and let that down.
Say something over the phone. Okay.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great question. We've had a long-standing partnership, and so I think that really facilitated that too.
I think easier to, and it doesn't really seem to have a way to separate from it.
They
want to make sure we don't steal
it. Asian Americans are the fastest growing group, racial ethnic minority in the U.S. They're not the largest by any means. I think they only make up 10% of the U.S. population, but they're growing most rapidly.
I was going to echo that sentiment. I think we're talking about like rates versus numbers, right? So, for example, Latinos are the largest, but not necessarily the most rapid growth. And someone was going to.
I was going to mention that the Pew actually released a report earlier this year that actually kind of answered the fastest growth population. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I just think it's interesting, like from the keynote yesterday, the presidential was, asking sort of everybody, and, so I think that's sort of what's been commonly understood. And so I think it's an interesting distinction to make.
What was it, the keynote? Sorry.
So the keynote speaker, he was talking about, about Asian Americans, doing really well at school and like sort of all of these general stereotypes. He's like, what's the fastest strong minority group? And everybody in the audience said, Latinos. So I just thought that was an interesting distinction.
Yeah, I think
Callum, I was just curious. I feel like New York City is special because it does its own health survey. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about the relationship between the city's citywide, the city health department health survey and its relationship to the kinds of things you guys talk about?
We used a lot of those same survey measures so that we could compare. But I think the real difference between the work that we do is just that we're able to reach communities that are not typically reached. And so the New York State Department of Health actually typically doesn't do a lot of work in Asian American communities. And part of that reason is they think communities are too small. And also just because of our partnerships and sort of everything that I talked about in terms of really working with community groups, we're able to reach communities that the census isn't reaching and things like that. So I think it's a much deeper dive, and I think that's why we're getting the numbers that we're getting. And in particular, we always do disaggregated work, which we think is really important. And reaching different subgroups and showing those numbers per subgroup. And typically, city-level data is aggregated at the Asian American level.
Okay. I actually want to add to that, because you were talking about the Latino population in New York State and mentioned how it wasn't growing as fast. What's interesting is, if you look at New York City, but those smaller populations that are fast-growing are actually upstate New York, mm-hmm. and pockets of upstate nobody really paid attention to. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, New York State itself has its own dynamics.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, so just to add to that, when I mentioned before, the 2010 census finally showed that New York City had a Nepali community at around 6,000. Mm-hmm. Most community groups think it's about 30,000. So they're just really not being counted for a lot of reasons.
I think you guys were the one that was sort of doing like a broad, like, what is the health status and what are the issues of concern. Can you talk a little bit about how that's translated or been used kind of on a policy or intervention level? So I feel like we all sort of have interventions that we're kind of organizing mm-hmm. already, but are there community groups that you're working with organizing mm-hmm. anything around that, or do you go to the health departments and mm-hmm. they can
So we definitely work, we put a lot of emphasis on dissemination and making sure that the information goes back to community groups. And I think I mentioned one partner, our partners who are working in the Bronx and the Cambodian and Vietnamese community, Mekong. They've been using the findings to advocate for mental health services in the community. But a huge part of the goal of the work that we do is that it helps inform our research priorities at the Center for the Study of Asian American Health. And so just one example, when we did the first round in 2004, and we saw very high rates of diabetes in Bangladeshi communities. So we have a whole, you know, 5-year randomized controlled trial, NIH-funded study called DREAM, that we're doing using a community health worker model in the Bangladeshi community in New York City. So definitely, you know, helps inform the work that we do.
The question was, share an example of a text message that was sent out. I don't have a Bible in front of me, but we did include some scripture, and because our advisory panel did mention certain versions of the Bible to use, so we definitely stuck to that for our community. In terms of a general text message, something about breast cancer, let's say, you know, something around the lines of October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, take the steps to reach out to your doctor to get screened, like something pretty general like that. So we did kind of volley in between faith-based messages and text-based messages, or health-based messages. Thank you. I should go right here because I saw your hand.
Yeah, no, I have a question about that, about the faith-based aspect.
Sure.
Do you recruit from churches? Because I guess I'm just curious.
Sure. So it was actually a spiritually-based approach. We incorporated spirituality and faith into the entire curriculum, both in training our community health advisors as well as the workshop presentation slides. So really integrating, you know, taking care of your body, because that's what the Bible says. And this is how you can take the steps for yourself to take care of your body. Because some people kind of interpret that differently, but you can take the steps to go to the doctor, and that's how you can take care of your body, just as a general example. Does that help?
Yeah, I'm wondering, was there any concern about that when we're working on COVID, Church? I mean, we're doing, we're actually, that's what we're dealing with right now. Should we incorporate faith or not? Include it? I don't know.
Sure. So our project was based on three different evidence-based interventions that were already faith-based in nature. Beforehand, one of the projects was kind of like spiritual-based versus just secular interventions, and I cannot remember off the top of my head. Aaron, I don't know if you remember the results from that study with Dr. Rolls.
I think they wanted to include church, but this population they found it to be the best way to reach out to the 40-75-year-old. It was originally Alabama, so it was really a great way to reach them, and for that, they found it spiritually-based more effective for education.
And we did approach faith-based organizations. So with other studies that Dr. Holtz, who's our principal investigator, has done in the past, they've gone into barbershops, they've gone through like different organizations, whereas with this project, we did decide we wanted to go through faith-based organizations. I can actually let Aaron, who's doing all of our tracking, attest to that. I don't know if you want to come to the microphone, Aaron, just so it can be recorded for the Q&A. This is Aaron. She's my colleague and our graduate research assistant who has been with the project for about 4 years, just to stay with myself.
So with our grant, we are, you know, NCI funded. We don't have a whole lot of money. So I use a lot of different Excel files. So I have a master with all of our participants, with their IDs and all their contacts. For each survey, I have a different file where we have the participants. Did they, how do we get their survey back? Did they come to the workshop? It's all a way for me to track, you know, okay, I need to mail this person the survey. I have to call this person today. For the churches and the tracking of our contacts, we actually have a Google Doc where all of our teams are able to log in. And if I call a CHA or Sherry Lou emails the pastor, we actually track that specific interaction so we can see, oh, okay, she contacted them last week, I need to follow up this week. So that way we're able to go in together and really keep in track so we're not calling the same person the same day because that gets really annoying.
Thanks, Aaron.
Yeah. Well, a little different kind of comment. Thousands of children die every day in the world, needlessly. Did you ever think of randomly working in communities to see if you could reduce the number of child deaths?
Is that to myself or anyone in particular? Who are you addressing the question to?
Huh?
Anyone in general. Okay.
The whole room.
The whole room. All right. So with our project, we did get funded by the National Cancer Institute, and our principal investigator does focus on breast, prostate, and colorectal cancer. So we haven't, in our lab, focused on anything with child-based deaths, but I don't know if you guys have any other responses to that.
Finished on time and actually a little early. So thank you for all the